Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world, clocking in at 6'3", 215 pounds. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and that's our combined height and weight.
Indeed. But that's, I mean, that looks good. You know, you're looking at amateur draft prospects, you see a pitcher, maybe a right fielder, 6'3", 215, and you're like, that is a professional body, Jake. On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we are going to talk about what is probably would have been the number one pick in the decade-long bummer draft, Steven Strasburg. But we will, of course, be celebrating his career as he is reportedly retiring. We're going to check in a little bit more about the latest on Shohei Ohtani. He tore his UCL. I don't know if you guys saw that. If
what?
It's the first time you're hearing about that, I apologize for breaking that news so bluntly. We are going to talk about Mookie Betts returning to Boston for the first time since they traded him away. That's happening this weekend. We are going to look at the L7 Texas Rangers in the wild, wild AL West race. John Fisher has finally spoken and said things that don't make us feel any better. And of course, it's Friday, so we will deliver the good, the bad, and the ugly.
But before we begin, we have a little note to you lovely listeners. Make sure you subscribe to the pod, download those apps. Every subscribe button you click, every download button you mash is another couple pennies in my pocket that I can spend on trinkets. Mm. And I love my trinkets.
He sure it does. Helps. And yet, you can leave, you know, rating and reviews wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate the support. It has been a fantastic season. Again, I've often reflected at many points this year, like, wow, we really weren't doing a podcast last year.
I know.
And now, you know, we launched this show in the final weekend, right, of the season last year. And it has been so fun to go three times a week. But we appreciate the support. And we encourage you to continue supporting. Make sure you download and subscribing every episode.
The more you rate and review, the better it is for the show. Mm-hmm. And the more likely it is we get to do it forever until we turn into dust.
Exactly. Until we are in too much pain and can no longer continue. And that was the case for Steven Strasburg, Jake Mintz. Now, we will probably never sign a 7-year, $245 million contract to podcast, but that is part of the Steven Strasburg story. You wrote a fantastic piece at Fox Sports Today, kind of examining the career of Steven Strasburg, who, despite my introduction, did live up to the hype. And while his retirement is a bummer in many respects, this is not a man who disappointed. This is someone who delivered on the promise and the expectations in a way similar, in some ways more so than Bryce Harper with the Nationals, when you consider he did achieve the top of the sport as a World Series MVP. Steven Strasburg is very important to the last decade and a half of baseball. I think I'm intrigued to hear from some people who did not grow up in the D.C. area, who kind of what their sense of Strasburg was. Because it was interesting seeing a lot of tweets yesterday after the news came out from former podcast guests and friend of the show, Jesse Doherty and Barry Sverluga at the Washington Post, that Steven Strasburg is indeed planning on retiring in the coming weeks. Just to be like, oh yeah, like Steven Strasburg, he was a really good pitcher. Like he was like, yeah. No. He was a lot more than that. He was not just, oh, wow. Like he was, this guy was a problem when he was healthy. It's like, no. Like this was, Steven Strasburg meant a lot more than his K per nine or his ERA, right? I think that's fair to say. Certainly to you.
Yeah. So here's how I want to do this. Mm-hmm. All right. Steven Strasburg grows up in the San Diego area, goes to San Diego State, and is fine his freshman year. He's a pretty good closer. He shows up a little overweight, gets ripped, and becomes a great closer. Incredible his sophomore year. Incredible his junior year. Comically good numbers. Drafted first overall by the Nationals in 2009 as the best college pitching prospect ever. Mm-hmm. When Paul Skeens was taken number one a couple months ago, everybody said, the best pitching prospect since Steven Strasburg, right? That was the sentence. And there's a reason for that. So then Strasburg zips through the minor leagues and debuts with the Nationals on June 8th, 2010, which for DC baseball fans is a day you remember where you were. Jordan and I grew up in the DC area. Neither of us were Nationals fans. And that's an important kind of distinction here. There's like DC baseball fans and there's Nationals fans, right? And even Jordan and I couldn't give a flying hoot about the Nats at the time. We remember exactly where we were on that day. For me, I remember it because I was playing travel baseball outside of town and was bummed I didn't get to watch it live. And I recorded it on TiVo, shouts out, no free ads, and went back and watched the whole start in its entirety. Jordan, why do you remember that, where exactly you were?
And you are much better at remembering where you were when baseball things happened. I think that is something that sets us apart, especially even in more recent baseball history. But I certainly remember where I was because I was there. I was sitting in the upper deck, kind of like first base side, upper deck with my dad and brother. I remember earlier that week, it was a Tuesday, and when this news came out, it was like, okay. Well, here's the craziest part. I've talked about being at the Strasburg debut before. Bryce Harper was selected number one overall the day before this. Okay. That Monday was the draft and the Nats took Bryce Harper and we all knew that. And Strasburg debuted the next day. And so these 48 hours was like, oh my God, like the Washington Nationals are relevant for the first time. But I remember when I think the news came out over the weekend, we jumped on and got tickets. And it was like $150 a pop, which, again, for the Nationals, like, you have to understand, it was inconceivable that Tuesday against the Pirates could be a ticket worth this much. But that's how big of a deal it was.
The only two games in franchise history that had mattered to that point were the first game at RFK against the Diamondbacks in 2005, which I was at, and the first game at National Park,
which was
the Ryan Zimmerman walk-off game, which you were at, right?
Right.
Shouts out. Oh, man, I'm getting nostalgic. Anyway, that Strasburg debut game is the greatest pitching debut we will ever see. Not necessarily statistics, right?
Although
the line
close.
Was good. Yeah. I mean, 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 14 Ks is nuts. And no pitching prospect would ever get to throw 7 innings in a debut anymore if they struck out 14 people. That seems impossible. But the expectations and the energy of that moment, it was the birth of a fan base. It's easy to dunk on Nationals fans, right? DC is a transplant town in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And that fan base lacked a clear identity. And even more importantly, it lacked a reason to give a shit about the team beyond the fact that they existed. And Steven Strasburg, with no slight to Ryan Zimmerman, was the first thing. That day was the birth of the Nationals and kind of a tentpole moment for the decade to come.
Totally.
They were relevant for the entirety of the 2010s, right?
Yeah.
And I'm so envious that you got to kind of be there and see that. What do you remember specifically about that night? I'm curious.
Yeah, well, and you remember, like, Zimmerman, by the way, like, let's not undersell Ryan Zimmerman. I mean, he's Mr. National for a reason. But I agree, on the grander scale, Ryan Zimmerman never made the Nationals relevant, right? Ryan Zimmerman might be the most important National, but he is not what elevated the whole franchise to a different level. That was Strasburg. That was Harper, obviously. But Zimmerman, I remember, homered in the first inning of this game. And for me, like, I had, of course, been to baseball games growing up, but I don't think I'd been to a postseason game in my life. And this was by far the loudest sporting event I had attended. And that remained true. The degree to which, and remember, when you strike out 14, there are a lot of opportunities. It was standing ovation every two strikes, the entire 40,000 people, which, again, if you look at the attendance log of the Nationals in 2010, like, there was half that many people, let alone, again, as I mentioned, the cost of the tickets. So not to mention it's Tuesday against the Pirates. It was totally surreal. There was nothing like it. And then so that's that. So that begins. And when you start your career like that, I mean, now we're off, because now every game is obviously the biggest deal in the world, and now everyone else wants to come in, and national reporters are coming in and making sure that he's getting the hype he deserves. And, you know, the Nationals in 2010 are average, right? I think they end up being around, oh no, I guess, never mind. They're still really bad. That I was thinking earlier, but I mean, this is still when they're finishing fifth all the time, right? These are two eventual last place teams in the Nats and Pirates, but Strasburg was a singular event in a way that, you know, pitching now, we don't even still have that many of those, right? Like Felix was that. That was part of what drew me to him, right? Is that the Felix day, the concept of a Felix start was in and of itself an event regardless of the team. And like, not that we don't have great pitchers now, but this is a unique thing. And he really kind of brought that to a new level, I would say.
So he's awesome for 12 starts of 2010, mm-hmm. blows out, gets Tommy John, returns at the end of 2011. And then from 2011 to 2019, he's like the sixth best pitcher in the world mm-hmm. over that span. Behind Kershaw, behind Verlander, probably behind Sale, behind Scherzer. But he is like either the best pitcher in tier two or the worst pitcher in tier one. Mm-hmm. And is spectacular and consistent mostly for that stretch of time.
Mm-hmm. But while I would just say like stylistically, like he was known as a prospect, and when he first came up, he was throwing 100, right? He was never really throwing that hard after TJ, but the command, I mean, you look at why his numbers were so good and maybe underappreciated. It's he didn't allow any homers or very few homers, and he didn't walk anybody, right? His command of three pitches was sensational.
2014, he strikes out 242 hitters leading the league. And my favorite Strasburg thing is when you look at that stretch of time from 2012 to 2019, I think he's like 18th or 20th in innings and he's sixth in strikeouts, mm-hmm. right? Which is awesome that he was just punching people out at a crazy degree. But the other moment that we need to talk about is 2019, right? Is the postseason run the Nats have to win the World Series. In between that debut and the 2019, like that decade, right? Like that's Steven Strasburg. Mm-hmm. Those two bookend moments, walking off the mound at the end of game six of the 2019 World Series and electrifying the Nats Park crowd at his debut in 2010. In between that, it's important to remember, right? He's incredible. He's consistent. He's one of the best pitchers in the world. That being said, these two moments define him, in my opinion. And that's a good thing. The Nats. The 2019 Nats, miraculous team. He's awesome all postseason long. He's their best pitcher in October. Remember, Max Scherzer's just woke up on the morning of game five and like couldn't turn his neck, right? And the Nats had to roll Joe Ross out there and they get blasted and they head back to Houston down 3-2. And the bullpen, remember how rickety this bullpen was?
They used six pitchers like the whole month. I mean, there were not many available for Davey.
Yeah, it was like Daniel Hudson and Sean Doolittle and sometimes Tanner Rainey and sometimes Wander Suero, and that was it, okay? Yep. And so they're going into Houston. It's like, we got to win two baseball games at Minute Maid. How the hell are we going to do this, right? And Steven Strasburg, 8 1/3, 7 Ks, 2 runs, dominance. Just in control the whole time. And I went back and watched the whole game last night. One of the coolest freaking starts, right?
Oh, man.
And his energy is identical to what it was in the debut. That's what struck me. He never changed. The game changed around him. He changed as a pitcher, clearly. He had to because of injuries and limitations and age. But his visage consistent. He walks off the mound after throwing 8 1/3 in Houston against one of the greatest teams ever. That 2019 Astros team was a wagon. And there is no glove pump, Jordan. There is no, you know, chest bumping. There is no let's freaking go. None of that. He's walking off the mound like he just allowed 7 runs in 2 innings and not 2 runs in 8 1/3.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to see. And there's this one moment that stuck with me. Sorry, let me finish. You see him walking off the mound. And in the background, it's the circle of the position players waiting for the reliever to come in. And it's also important to remember Davey Martinez was tossed in this game. So he wasn't on the mound at that point because it was the Trey Turner play down the first baseline, I believe. Mm-hmm. But you see Trey Turner turned towards Strasburg as he's walking off the field and has this little Trey Turner smirk on his face. And it just says, it's just the smirk just says, holy shit. That was crazy. And when you see someone like Trey Turner, who's one of the best players in baseball, in awe at what a teammate accomplished, that lets you know how people within the game felt about Steven Strasburg.
Especially because if you zoom into that individual day and that game, incredible on its own. But that was the exclamation point on what was not just an incredible postseason run, but an incredible season on which Steven Strasburg led the league in innings in the regular season before throwing another 36 innings with a 1.98 ERA in the playoffs. And so it was just like, oh my, like the holy shit was not just what he did that night. It was just like, oh my God, like this dude has carried us almost to the end. They, of course, win that game because they're up by a good amount. And then they win game seven. I think Howie Kendrick did something. It was pretty cool.
But they win game seven in part because they get to use their whole bullpen.
Oh, exactly.
And they get to use their whole bullpen because Steven Strasburg hoovered up all those innings. Now, those two moments to me are it's just the whole thing. We define the success of a baseball career. Our definition of that is a little bit warped, where I think there's so much discussion around, is this guy a Hall of Famer? And Steven Strasburg is not, unfortunately. The longevity is obviously not there. The war total's not there. He will not, as I think I wrote, have a sweaty day under the Cooperstown sun, sweating bullets through a blue blazer next to a bunch of legends in sunglasses, right? Mm-hmm. He won't have that. It doesn't mean he did not fulfill expectations. It does not mean he did not succeed. Because baseball players, when they begin their careers, really seek to do two things, and that is to win a World Series and to accumulate generational wealth for their families. They really, like, yeah, they want to be great. But I had a player on the Nats yesterday when I asked about Strasburg after the game. They're like, Cooperstown just kind of happens to some people. Like, you wake up when you're 29 or 30, maybe, and you're like, oh, I guess I could go to Cooperstown. No one is really, unless like you're Bryce Harper, is thinking about that all the time, right? And so Steven Strasburg's career was a success because he did it. He delivered on it. He was fantastic. He was superb. He took the franchise where he was supposed to take it. And for that, his body physically is forever changed.
Yeah. And that has been the story over the last 3 years, 4 years, I guess. He's thrown fewer innings in the last 4 years than he did in that postseason run. He's made eight starts. Yeah, eight starts. His last one coming last June against the Marlins. And yeah, I mean, it's been more than just like, oh, is it the elbow? He had Tommy John. No. It's the thoracic outlet. Involves a lot having to do with the core and the back and just everything up to nerve issues. Like, and here's the thing, right? Like, this is pitching. Is it because he threw more innings than anybody else on earth in 2019? Maybe, right? Is it also just maybe sometimes what happens to pitchers, and it happened to be one of the most important pitchers of the last decade? That's also possible, right? The fact that they gave him that contract coming off of that is both understandable, and even at the time we were all like, yikes, right? But it's not about that. It doesn't matter. The Nats obviously aren't going to regret that. And while sure, of course, by technical objective terms, it is one of the worst contracts in baseball history, I don't think anybody cares that much. Obviously, it's not your money, and it's not, and I promise you, it's not like the Learners don't appreciate Steven Strasburg. It's not like he will not have his number retired. It's not like he's not going down as a franchise legend. It is very unfortunate and sad what has happened over the last few years, but it does not diminish what was an incredible career.
Most expensive statue outside the stadium ever. I mean, 245 mil for a slab of bronze is tough tickets. But yesterday, I was at Yankee Stadium yesterday for the Nats-Yankees game, and this news dropped in the middle of the game. And in the post game, they asked Davey Martinez, the Nats manager, like, hey, Strasburg, he's retiring? And Davey said, look, that guy means a lot to me, and he means a lot to the franchise, and because of that, I'm not going to comment right now. Strasburg's going to have a day. They're going to do a moment. They're going to do the press conference. They're going to, I mean, People will cry. He might even cry. We'll see. But he's just a remarkable, remarkable baseball thing. And I am I feel fortunate that we got to witness his greatness. Yeah. He is a player who I will remember for a long, long time. And what is so interesting about him to me, I touched a little bit on this in the article I wrote. Harper, when he shows up in DC, is this enormous ball of emotion. He's this dumb kid gesticulating everywhere. And so it makes sense that people would watch Bryce Harper and feel things. Mm-hmm. Strasburg was the opposite. He never emoted. He was shy. He was quiet. He did not, love does not brag or boast, and neither did he.
But he never.
Despite that, he made people feel a way. And to me, that is the whole point of following sports, is to feel a way, is to allow yourself to connect to a player on the field, to a stranger that you do not know, because of their accomplishments and the feats that they allow you to see.
And that's why he is, that is what, when he put it all together at San Diego State, they were like, hey man, you better be an amazing pitcher. And he did that. And he did that at the beginning, and he did that at the end. And we will always be grateful for the Steven Strasburg experience.
If you have any thoughts or memories about Steven Strasburg, I know there are a lot of DC-based people who listen to the show. Email us, baseballbarbacast, that's barbcast@gmail.com. Maybe we'll read some of those stories out next week. Kudos to Strasburg on an unbelievable career. Jordan, let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
And when we return, we're going to talk a little bit more about this guy named Shohei Ohtani, a guy named Mookie Betts, and the best team in baseball, the Oakland A's.
This is former PGA Tour winner Smiley Kaufman, host of The Smiley Show, a SiriusXM podcast. You want to know what I love about golf? I get to talk to some really cool people. I get to walk the fairways of the best courses in the world with the best players in the world, and I get to share it with you every single week. Listen to The Smiley Show right now on Stitcher, Pandora, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Smiley, S-M-Y-L-I-E.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. It's been a bummer of a week with the Steven Strasburg retirement and Shohei Ohtani's UCL saying no mas. So let's talk a little bit about Shohei. We did an emergency pod yesterday, and the discourse around it yesterday kind of bummed me out a little bit. And maybe some of this is our fault, but it was a lot of like, how does this affect man's market?
Yeah.
And I don't care yet. You've been saying this for a while, like you can't get to Ohtani sweepstakes vibe until November 1st. And that's where I'm at now. Don't care how it impacts man's market on November 1st. I will care quite a bit how it impacts man's market. We learned yesterday that he's going to continue to hit.
I tweeted yesterday afternoon before that was reported. I was like, it's funny because he's probably just going to hit four homers at Citi Field. But then I was like, okay, but like he is at least undergoing a discussion for what will be the most important, you know, medical decision regarding upcoming surgery that he'll ever have to make. Like maybe he won't go on this East Coast road trip. You know, maybe he'll hang back and at least take a couple days. And then when they come back home, he can return hitting home runs. That would have been totally understandable. No one would have faulted him. Even the people that want to see him hit, like that would have been fine. Instead, he's apparently just the sentence of just like, Shohei will continue to hit while he awaits a second opinion. It's just, oh man, what a guy. What a guy.
One of a kind. One in a million. And
one in a million is disrespectful. One in a bajillion. There's one of we'll never see anything like it again.
Yeah. But we want to have some fun here, which is disrespectful of us. One of the moments from Shohei tearing his UCL again, which is a bummer. Duh. One of the moments we'll remember is the Perry Minasian press conference. The general manager of the Angels on Wednesday night had to eat it because he had some bad news. Shohei's UCL had a tear, and Mike Trout was going back on the IL. And to convey this information, they could have just released a, you know, like a press release. They could have just put that out. Mm-hmm. And it would have looked weird to put two of the greatest players of all time, like the death knell to the season on a piece of paper. And so shouts out to Perry for eating it and for doing the presser and for taking the heat.
Yes.
However, he did a great job.
Yes.
Let's play the clip now.
Couple injury things to address, obviously, and you know, Mike Trout is going to go back on the IL. So, tried to swing yesterday, didn't go well. So we're going to put him back on the IL, give him some rest, see where that goes. And obviously, Shohei left the game today. We did imaging in between games. He does have a tear, you know, and he won't pitch the rest of the year. So we're going to get a second opinion. Go from there, but it's basically day to day. Obviously, he hit, so you know that's where we're at.
That's a UCL tear.
Yes, yeah. So again, I don't have as far as plans and details. I don't have those yet.
So that's tough to hear. It's tough to watch.
It's tough to hear. It's tough to watch, and you can watch it if it would be the Bally Sports West Twitter account. Tweet it out if you want to go find it and watch it for yourself. Because the visual, I think, goes a long way. But an important context for this before I know you want to kind of get into character here and do your best if you had to be in this situation is remember that this was a doubleheader. And they got the imaging done between the games. So they knew after the first game that Shohei tore his UCL. He then plays the second game, right? Okay. So Perry had about probably 3 hours or so, 3.5 hours or so to collect his thoughts and his emotions and the news and decide how to deliver it. And what you just heard is his best attempt. And like you said, Jake, I cannot even fathom. Like, this has already been such a tough season, such a tough few weeks as the Angels season has spiraled before the injury. And for Perry, for this to be how it goes is just brutal. Jake?
If I was Perry in that situation, I'm just dropping other bad news. So, oh, yeah. Like, Trout's, you know, on the IL. Otani's done for the year. Your dog is dead. Mm-hmm. Global warming is going to kill us all.
Yep.
And
no one's going to be able to afford anything. Everything is, you know, the inflation and all these things. And we have this natural disaster. You know how hard it is to buy a
home? It's impossible to buy a home in this economy now.
Yep. Yep. Just like just say like, oh, like all the bathrooms in the stadium don't work. We can't use any more bathrooms. All the bathrooms you guys have, they don't work anymore. So sorry, you're going to have to just kind of hold it. Just every possible bad news. He could have done everything because once you deliver the news, that Mike Trout is out, and so is Shohei Ohtani. I mean, everyone is like, wait, what? So, Jake, go ahead. If you had to deliver the news, Jake, you're the GM of the Angels. How would you do your best? How would you deliver this information? You sit down at the podium in front of the Angels logos with the worst news in the world. Take it away.
All right, everyone. A couple things to address, obviously. So, Mike Trout, going to go back on the IL. That's the injured list. Tried to swing yesterday, didn't go well, so we're going to put him back on the IL, give him some rest, see where that goes. And then obviously Shohei left the game today. We did some imaging in between games. He does have a tear. You know, he won't pitch the rest of the year. So we're going to get a second opinion. Go from there. So it's basically day to day. Obviously, he hit today. So yeah, that's where we're at.
Sorry, Perry. Is the UCL tear? Is that what you're saying has happened?
Yeah. Now, as far as plans and details, I don't have those yet.
All right. Thanks, Perry. Appreciate it, man. That's good stuff. Yeah, you try delivering that news to a room full of people and cameras. I wish you the best of luck. Jake, before we move on, I think we should talk about Mike Trout for a couple minutes because it's not something we did any of yesterday. Of course, Shohei is the big news here, as it should be. But Mike Trout is also one of the like 10 greatest players of all time. So I feel like him being out again, possibly for the rest of the season, who knows, maybe he comes back in September, is very sad and very troubling. Mike Trout has played not a lot of baseball over the last 3 years. Here's a really depressing fact, Jake. You know who's played, who's had more plate appearances than Mike Trout since 2020? So since 2021, you know, he played most of the 2020 season. You know who has more plate appearances than him?
Zach Neto.
No, that's mathematically impossible. Fernando Tatis Jr. I don't know if you remember, but Fernando Tatis Jr. didn't play last season. And so Mike Trout, over the last 3 seasons in plate appearances, ranks 207th, three ahead of Franmil Reyes, who also has not played a lot of baseball recently, just ahead of Jazz Chisholm, who has been injured a ton, ahead of platoon guys like Daniel Vogelback, players. Rougned Odor has just played almost as much as Mike Trout. These numbers and facts make me sad because this is not how this is supposed to go. Let's move the Angels dysfunction aside, right? We've kind of accepted that for quite some time. That is, of course, a layer of this that makes this sad. But in the same way that the number one reaction to Shohei getting hurt is, oh my God, we don't get to watch him play the Shohei Ohtani version of baseball, this just sucks so much. And this is why I took him in the bummer draft. And in an individual sense, not just in the sense of the context of the Angels. And you might say, like, oh, like Mike Trout, like also he's declining, right? His OPS this year was only 858. No. if you look at the underlying data, he's still like 97th percentile in XWOBA and hard hit rate and everything. And he's still one of the very few best hitters alive. And I don't know what happens next with him. He might just be in purgatory here with the Angels on a bad team next season. But I just hope he can come back and play because it just sucks. He is amazing and I don't like this very much.
It makes me appreciate players killing it at 37. Because the physicality and athleticism that you need to have to be a superstar at 25 does not always lend itself to the same behavior at 32 or 37, right? Mike Trout is a physical freak.
Yeah. Still one of the fastest players in the league.
Correct. 6'4", built like a linebacker, elite speed, rotational ability. That's hard to maintain as your body ages. And so Mike Trout's decline or physical decline, his injury issues, is kind of the expectation. Like, I feel like shit right now. I'm 27. I'm going to feel horrible when I'm 32. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so anybody that's able to buck that trend, I think deserves applause rather than scorn for those who fall victim to it.
And it's worth noting that, you know, this injury, I mean, think about what the injuries have been. 2021, it's the calf strain from hell, which is, I think, what Ben Lindbergh termed it, because it was like, oh, like calf strain, he'll be back in 8 weeks. Oh, no, never mind, out for the season, right? Might us recall last year when it's announced that he has a rare back disorder, and the Angels doctor, for some reason, publicly is like, yeah, this is something we're just going to have to deal with for the rest of his career. And everyone's like, what? What did you say? Like, what? And then Mike Trout's like, no, relax. It's all fine. This year, seems like the back's been okay. He breaks his hammy bone on a swing, which is a freak injury. But again, like, it's the wear and tear of playing baseball to the amount that he did since he's been, you know, 11. And so it sucks and it's unlucky. And I hope that there's still a version of him that is the best player in the league. But yeah, man, it's just he hasn't played a lot of baseball the last 3 seasons, and it's going to be, you know, turning 33 next year.
My calf, my back, my hamate, and my crack.
That's where we're headed next season. So whether we see Mike Trout again this year, man, that sucks. All right. Jake Mintz, speaking of the best players in the world, Mookie Betts. We had Steven Nelson on Wednesday to talk about the Dodgers and what makes them special. And he talked a lot about how it is now Mookie and Freddie's team. And that has been a very interesting transition. He was talking a lot about, you know, off the field, but certainly on the field too, as they are both MVP candidates this year. Mookie, since we talked to Steven Nelson, I believe collected like 8 hits over the last 2 days in Cleveland. But the reason we are talking about him now is not just because he's having an amazing season. It is because Mookie Betts will be playing baseball games in Boston this weekend. Much reporting and discussion about this leading into this weekend. Of course, Mookie wondering what his reception will be like. Talked to Pete Abraham over the week. There was a great story in The Athletic, joint effort from Chad Jennings, Jen McCaffrey, and Fabian Ardaya, looking at Mookie's transition into being like a real famous person. Like, he's out there. He's got a podcast just like us. It's much cooler because he's Mookie Betts. He is like now embracing being in LA, even though he didn't like LA before he went there, right? And so what I'm interested in, and really the one thing I want to talk about here, is Mookie kind of inferring, being asked about, like, doesn't really know what the reception is going to be. And that's because my understanding is there's at least some faction of Boston fans that think that because he didn't accept an extension that was probably below his market value, despite constantly saying and continuing to reiterate even to today how much he loved Boston and wanted to stay there for his career, that he never actually loved the city. And Mookie wondering, oh, I wonder what the reception will be. I think Mookie will be cheered like crazy. What is your sense here?
I would be shocked if he gets booed. Yeah, same. Shocked. I think the first at bat he strolls up there, they're going to go nuts for him.
I think
because,
so.
Because, I mean, the other thing that's important to understand with Mookie, he won a World Series and an MVP.
Yeah, it's not like he didn't do it there.
He succeeded. He did it. He won. And so there's no missed opportunity there. I guess there is, because they didn't get, you know, the decade to come of Mookie Betts in some ways, right? But he did the thing there. And so if you boo him, like, GTFO, my dude. No,
I obviously agree. Easy for me to say. But yeah, it'll be, I think there's going to be enough dummies in the crowd. I don't know if you'll hear it on TV, but I think that there's enough, you know, stupid sports people that are still salty.
Yes, but that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. If the boos are drowned out by the cheers, there are no boos.
That's true.
It's a binary That's situation. True. Well, I guess there's a trinary situation. There's boos. There's the mixed reaction in the middle, right?
Trinary is an incredible term.
It's a trinary, dude. Trinary situation.
And they could say, oh, well, I'm just booing, you know, Chaim Bloom, who's maybe in the stands for training him.
No. They're not booing. They're saying, Bloom.
It was
Bloom. Mook.
Mook. Oh, yeah. Did he get those chants? I feel like not really in the same way.
No, because it sounds like Euclidus. And that was.
Oh, that's true. So they definitely can't do that. So anyway, it'll be cool to see him back in Boston. I'm sure he'll have like 10 hits and, you know, steal bases and play second base. Right. That'll be fun. Right.
It was cute that he said he was nervous on his pod. It's like, yeah, you're fine, bro. Let's move from the AL East to the AL West. The Rangers on a fat L7. Woo, more like Relangelers with all the L's in there.
Ooh, yeah, nice. L7 and still in first place is, you know, goes to show you how far ahead they were and just the incredible first half that they had. I will say that the Rangers' struggles in recent weeks have kind of been exact, like, nothing has shocked me about the Rangers this season. Once it was clear that their offense was one of the three best lineups in the league, which I think we saw was there was a possibility that was going to be the case. Once that kind of came together, it was like, all right, but the pitching and, oh, the bullpen. And, okay, they've acquired all these starters. Some of them are injured all the time. Some of them are injured on and off. They trade for some relievers. It's not enough. Being again, when they trade for Chapman, it's like Will Smith, Chapman, Josh Sbors. I'm like, okay.
You're like Will Smith, Chapman?
Yeah. Josh I was Sbors? Like, I know Will Smith is like closed a lot and like he's not bad, but like I don't consider him like, you know, the game is over, you know, in the way like at all. And that was, you know, we saw that last night. Massive home run he allows to Ryan Jeffers. Of course, Chapman has had his moments of struggle too since he got there. And yeah, I mean, this is still a really good team, but it is flawed to the point where now, yeah, they're hanging on for dear life here. And the AL West race, on a bigger picture, is looking to be easily the most exciting division race that we have down the stretch, because it is not a binaries. Option Jakin is a trinary race with the Mariners and Astros, one game back as we enter the weekend. And yeah, you know, when you look around the league, you know, maybe the Rays can raise Orioles. We'll see. I think the Orioles are going to hang on, but that's still two games and the Rays are playing well. NL Central, yeah, right. Like the Brewers have won five in a row. I think they'll probably be fine. But the rest of them, you know,
the Braves NL Central done. Is the fastest turtle. The NL West is 12 games.
Mm-hmm.
The NL East is 13 and a half. And the AL Central is the fastest turtle.
Yeah. I mean, the AL Central, the fact that Minnesota is only six games up is an abomination. But anyway.
Deplorable.
Yeah. The point is Texas, Seattle, Houston is going to be an epic final month. And I'm excited to watch these three teams. Because again, unlike the fastest turtle, like these three teams on their right day can all look like fucking awesome. You know, and so that is, it makes it feel like the stakes feel really, really, really high. And of course, you have these teams in Seattle and Texas who have been getting their ass kicked by Houston for the last half decade. And Houston clearly diminished, but still really, really, really good. It's going to be really fun down the stretch.
How many of these three teams make the postseason?
Right. So I guess you'd set the, I mean, there's basically no way it's not two. But is it three? Is it three? I think it is three. I think it is going to be three. That is a Toronto Blue Jays commentary, which is maybe another discussion we should be having, but I think it'll be three. I really do. Unless Texas really starts to bungle it. I've mentioned this before, but, the end of September is just going to be wild because the Mariners finished the year with, I think, 10 games against Texas, then Houston, then Texas. So it's this is it, man. This is going to be the one we're watching. This is about the time when we figure out when that's going to happen. And it is going to be very fun. So, and terrifying as a Mariners fan. So can't wait.
Let's stay in the AL West for one final topic before the good, the bad, and the ugly. John Fisher, the reclusive owner of the Oakland Unathletics, opened his mouth and said words for the first time in a long time, did himself a little interview piece with NBC Bay Area's Raj Mathai. Jordan, your takeaways from John Fisher's interview about the A's in a season where he is moving the team. He has announced that they are moving the team to Vegas.
Yes, and the reason that he accepted an interview, and he's did another one with ESPN, he's actually doing media this week, he has literally not spoken publicly since 2005. Think about how hard that is to do, you would think. But such is the nature of when you are rich and owner, like you get to kind of make the rules and you get to just duck people forever.
I just want to say, if I was that rich, I would never talk to anybody. I would just be on an island and not own the A's.
Yes. And so the gist of it is there's nothing shocking in here, right? His basic point is, we've tried so hard, we've spent so much money to try to keep the team in Oakland, and the city has not stepped up enough in time with the pressure of the collective bargaining agreement with MLB that says you need to figure this out before January 2024, or before the end of 2023, or you are going to lose your revenue sharing money. And because what is very clear in this, despite John Fisher saying, I'm a baseball fan, I've always been a baseball fan, I am a baseball owner because I'm a baseball fan, I love the game, blah, 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 blah. It is clear that his desire to have a good business and not spend all of his money to ensure that Oakland stays in Oakland or that the A's stay in Oakland, that's what's important to him. And so while maybe he is a baseball fan, he is not enough of one to really pony up and ensure that it stays in his hometown. And he talks about, oh, it's painful because these people say, like, but he gets it. It's not like he doesn't understand why people are angry. It's not like Hal Steinbrenner talking about the Yankees sucking and being like, I don't understand the fans' disappointment. John Fisher at least admits, I understand they are hurt. This is what I believe is going to allow the A's to be a competitive franchise. This is more along the lines of the John Angelos rhetoric of, it's hard to compete if we don't have the right revenue streams. It's essentially the exact same argument that John Angelos just trotted out last week. It's the same thing. And so he's saying we need a new stadium and that's going to allow us to retain our players, blah, 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 blah. The craziest part of this interview, but go ahead and give us, and then I'll deliver my favorite slash least favorite anecdote.
Quote, we spent $100 million trying to get these approvals. Well, then you spent it poorly, brother.
Also, just, okay, then why can't, like, if you really cared about this much, spend another $100 million. You have so much money, right?
And it's not your money. It's like the franchise is making money.
Well, right. That's what he's saying. Oh, no, we're going to lose $40 million this year because we have all these. Okay, that's fine. I don't want to get into the financials because it's not that important. The thing, this quote just kills me. Okay. And then I want to get to the true funniest part about this, which I was going to say for Ugla, but we have to talk about it here. Here's this quote. The question, the DNA of your, so basically they're saying, like, would you sign free agents and like keep your players in Vegas? Quote, what I think would change in Las Vegas is our ability to keep our best players. Fine. This next part just crushes me. Somebody told me that in the last baseball All-Star game, there were 6 A's players that weren't playing for the A's anymore. We had the ability, if we had the revenues to drive things, to be able to retain that core group of players. Now I'm super excited about the new core group of players who we have coming up, blah, blah, blah. But like somebody told me
that there were a bunch of former A's in
Austin. Somebody told me that Sean Murphy is the greatest catcher in the world.
Yeah, the someone Braves. Mentioned, I thought Matt Olson had retired. And apparently he's
somebody told me. Good. Somebody let me know.
Somebody mentioned this
but
to me.
But this brings me to this, Jake, which really what I wanted to talk about. I'm going to put a link here in the document. Take a look at this. So there's not video of the interview. This is just the transcript. But a very observant Twitter user took a picture, or there is a picture of him, kind of like a screen grab or a picture from the NBC news saying like, oh, like, you know, exclusive with John Fisher coming. And there is a picture of John Fisher's notepad in front of him. So he's got a bunch of notes in front of him, clearly preparing him for the interview in some way, or what he wanted to have write down. And so it seems like you're seeing this for the first time. So describe to me what you're seeing on one of the many notepads in front of John Fisher that someone zoomed in and seems to have deciphered.
It is a notepad. There are 3 lines with writing. One appears to say Mark Kotze and is underlined. That is the name of the A's manager. Below that, it says Zach Geloff with maybe an exclamation point after Geloff, I think. And then Tyler Soderstrom, another of the young Oakland A's.
That's all it says.
Incredible. That's it.
It's just
that's
3 names on a piece of paper. So when I hold on, we're going to get to that in a second. When I saw that, I was like, oh my God. First of all, this is the funniest thing ever. We could talk about what exactly that was to begin with. But then I went to the transcript and I was like, did he mention these guys, right? Did he mention Zach Geloff, exclamation point, and Tyler Soderstrom and Mark Kotze? And he doesn't. He does not. This transcript is everything part of the interview. He doesn't mention them by name. You can kind of see the parts where he refers to the new core group of players, where you could imagine him kind of going in that direction. But my question to you, and the reason why I wanted to bring this up, Jake, is why were these 3 names written down? Describe to me the situation that got John Fisher to write these names down. And even though he didn't end up mentioning in the interview, how do you think this came about?
Who are you excited about? Well, of course, Mark Kotze.
See, I read it because Mark Kotze is underlined. I read it as John Fisher called Mark Kotze and said, hey, Mark, who are some young players I should be excited about? So like Mark Kotze is like the headline for the notes for the meeting.
Mm.
You know, like he called him. Kotze was like, let's get off kids. You know, he's homering every day. Right. And then we got Soderstrom, you know, son of a former big leaguer, top prospect. Who was,
and then he
just
was like,
sent down
sorry,
to AAA.
Just sent out to AAA. Sorry, I got to run. I got to go manage.
Sorry. We got to prep. We got to prep for the Royals coming to town. And then that was it. But it just kills me. It's just so funny, man. It's just like everything about this, no matter how it happened, is just amazing. Just so funny. Because like he says, and he admits to the story, like, yeah, I haven't been to many games this year, but like I really love the baseball. I love the team. I love, you know, it's like, okay, dude.
Love watching the boys run around in a circle, smacking that old pigskin.
Yeah. Anyway, Jordan, I just had to share that with you.
I appreciate it. Love talking about the Oakland Athletics. Let's wrap things up with the good, the bad, and the ugly. One thing good from the week that was, a thing that was bad, and a thing that made us think about Dan Ugla. I'm going to start, actually.
Go ahead.
With a good. You know who sang the national anthem yesterday at the Nats-Yankees game I went to?
I don't.
Season one American Idol runner-up Justin Guarini.
Wow. Well, that's especially for you. I mean, that's a big one. You want to explain why?
As a Kelly Clarkson super fan, to see the defeated.
Did you boo him? Or you?
I wanted to, but then people would have thought I was booing the anthem. And I don't want to be seen as un-American at Yankee Stadium. But yeah, Justin Guarini singing. He's doing a show on Broadway, I think is why.
Glad he's doing well.
Shouts out. Glad he's doing well. But that was good, dude. Just like settling into my seat in the press box and to sing the anthem, Justin Guarini.
And to think, Jake, you know, our running bit on the Cespedes Family Barbercast could have been Justin versus Avril.
I know. Could have been.
That's great. Sorry, that's good.
That's good.
Let's be clear. Yeah. My good this week, I was going to talk about Cole Reagans, but it's fine. He's throwing really hard. Look at my tweet about him. It's fine. This is a very simple good. Curaçao is in the Little League World Series, and they will play Chinese Taipei for the International Championship tomorrow. And Jonathan Scope, who played for the Curaçao team in Little League many years ago, is there and cheering them on. And Jonathan Scope, who was DFA'd and released by the Tigers last month and has not been picked up because he might just not be good at Major League Baseball anymore, is like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to go to Williamsport and cheer on Curaçao. And he was there for both games and they interviewed him both games and he was having a great time. They won a close game against Mexico yesterday. I fear they are going to get destroyed by Chinese Taipei tomorrow. But the point is, Jonathan Scope will be there and that is so cool because Williamsport is not a place you can just show up to. He had to make the effort and I love it and it made me very happy. So that was cool to see.
Do we think he's at one of the two hotels or do we think he's at an Airbnb? Yes.
No, I don't. Airbnb. No, I'm sure he's, maybe he's part of the Curaçao room block. Maybe he's staying in the Grove.
Staying in the Grove.
He's, former players get exclusive access. So anyway, I just like to see that. Jonathan Scope. What's your bad?
Bad. Carlos Correa. Carlos Correa has had a disappointing season in his first year with the Minnesota Twins. But I would like to highlight one particular statistical anomaly in his season. Jordan, are you aware how many double plays Carlos Correa has grounded into this year?
No. Is he leading the league?
Oh, boy, is he ever. He has 24 double plays grounded into, two more than Ty France, who has 22.
Oh.
The all-time record
for a single season is like 40, right?
Is since 1961, which is what I consider baseball.
Okay.
For the purposes of this conversation. The record there is 36. Jim Rice had 36 in 1984, 35 in 1985. Was Jim Rice just like not running to first base? Was he running backwards? Was he going the wrong way?
He was so mad when he grounded into what looked like a double play that he just went back to the dugout.
It's like, oh, that's stupid. I'm getting out of here. Anyway, but in the wild card era, the record is Billy Butler, 32, Ben Grieve, 32, Cal Ripken, 32. Okay.
Machado's had some GIDP.
Yeah, Machado's had some big ones. But Correa's at 24. Okay. Now, it's on pace for 30 is where he is, which would put him in like the top four, basically. Right?
Yeah.
Something to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Correa, because he's going to play every day because the Twins got to win the division. Mm-hmm. And he still hasn't really figured it out. And why do you ground into double plays? We've talked about this before. You're slowish. You hit the ball really hard because fielders have more time to turn it. You're hitting behind guys who get on base, Edward Julian, and you're hitting it on the ground. And so Carlos Correa, double play watch. That is bad.
I love that. Machado, by the way, led the league in double plays with 24 in 2019 and had 26 in 2018. So, but that's a good transition because I'm going to go from one double play hero to someone that if he was playing baseball would be a double play hero. And that is Anthony Rendon, Jake. We just talked about Steven Strasburg. Anthony Rendon signed an identical contract to Steven Strasburg, 7 years, $245 million with the Los Angeles Angels. And for all the bummer and disappointment of Shohei Ohtani's injury and Mike Trout's injury and all those things, Anthony Rendon's Angels tenure has far outweighed both of those recently in terms of disappointment. And it is not just that he has been injured in all kinds of weird ways and has sucked when he has played. Although, reminder, he was amazing in 2020, even though it didn't matter. But it is the way to which he has just decided, this doesn't matter to me anymore. Sam Blum, of course. Blum. Angels beat writer for The Athletic. He had this update. He has been, this update back in July crunched me. He has like shin injury and a wrist injury, whatever. Sam tweeted, July 19th. When asked how he was feeling today, Anthony Rendon said, "I'm not here," and left the clubhouse. So that was great. And then this past week, basically, of course, people ask Sam, like, what's going on with Rendon? Is he ever coming back? And he basically says that Anthony Rendon, Nevin says, it depends on which day you ask him. It comes in pain, comes and goes each day, hasn't done any on-field work, whatever. And then Sam adds, Rendon has not been available to update his health despite requests. The Angels also stopped making their head athletic trainer available this season. There's no information on the Angels' most expensive player who is under contract through 2026. Just to be clear, no one is preventing Anthony Rendon from talking other than Anthony Rendon. This is not an arty Angels PR coaching thing. He just doesn't want to. And so I don't want to go too far towards the, like, you have to talk to the media and stuff. But, like, this is just the way that he seemed to handle this and the way that the Angels seem to have no way to kind of change it is just, it sucks. Because the fact that this is now also going to be what Angels fans are stuck with is unfortunate. So that is bad. What is Ugla?
I'm having a problem.
Okay. What's up?
I need you to talk through something with me, okay? I think I might be getting old. Yesterday, right, in the Washington Nationals New York Yankees game, C.J. Abrams, who has been incredible, shortstop for the Washington Nationals, ripped a homer in the late in the game time. Well said, Jake. To give the Nats in the fourth quarter, to give the Nationals a 5-3 lead over the Yankees. He admired his work and then flipped the bat towards the dugout, rounded the bases, and received a talking to, respectfully, from Davey Martinez, the Nationals manager, a man who has earned a reputation for being an old school grump. I, being the intrepid reporter I am, I went and asked Davey Martinez about this after the game, both on and off camera, Jordan. And Davey gave the spiel about respecting the game and doing things the right way, yada, yada, yada. And I Kevin Franzen, friend of the show who's on the Nats broadcast, pointed out to me that part of the reason that Davey was mad is that in the at-bat before, C.J. Abrams hit a ground ball to Anthony Volpe, who bobbled it and threw to first and got Abrams by a couple steps because Abrams was not running. Abrams probably would have beat that out if he was running because he's very fast. And that Davey was frustrated because he didn't run it out the at-bat before. And I, as someone who is a let-the-kids-play advocate, somehow understood both sides of this debate, of this conversation.
That's okay.
Am I spending too much time in baseball clubhouses? Am I getting grumpy? Am I getting old? I'm not telling C.J. Abrams to respect the game or to do anything the right way. Mm-hmm. He can do whatever he wants. And he should feel empowered to be himself on a baseball field. But at the same time, Davey Martinez is around for a reason and has respect in that clubhouse for a reason. And in the warped environment that is a baseball clubhouse, there is something to be said for keeping your players under, giving them some sort of expectations about how to carry themselves in the field. Can you help me?
I think you're in a totally reasonable place. And maybe there are some Gen Z kids listening to this saying, "You old farts, how could you even begin to agree
we've changed
with Davey Martinez?" To which I say, you're right. I'm old as shit. I think there's a difference and a spectrum between understanding it and being like, okay, and being grumpy. You're not being grumpy. You're not getting mad that he didn't run it out, right? And that's not your job too. But I think that there is more of, it's not, back to the binary, trinary. It's not that simple. And while I generally am going to disagree with Davey trying to stifle, remember, this is the same guy who got mad at Victor Robles for wearing a clown nose when Madison Bumgarner called him a clown. But even that, I like got it from Davey's perspective, and I'm still going to make fun of him. Like, I think you can do kind of both of those things, right? And fortunately, this is what's weird, right? Because this extends to all the bat flip discourse and all that stuff. I mean, to some degree, because some of the stuff with like Tingler and whatever we talked about with Tatis, we don't have to rehash that. But the part that I've never understood from a fan perspective is giving half a shit about how players emote, right? Other teams, my team. Like, that is so weird to me. But I can get it from the person who's in charge and getting the best out of the players in some ways, right? And who is, in theory, the person who is teaching them the game and help. That's all fine, right? And there's some problems with that. But that's why I will never understand the fans actively getting angry about this stuff from the couch. Because what standard are you holding? Why is that bothersome for you? Why is that impacting the way you're watching the game? I don't get that. So from your perspective, I think you're in a totally reasonable spot.
Thanks for helping me, friend.
You got it. My ugla is actually an ugla that I've done before back in 2020, and it is about 3 home run games. This is a statistical thing that I love and I track a lot. And you didn't stay for the game, right? When Judge hit 3 earlier this week?
Okay. I was in Philly.
You were in Philly, right? Sorry. So Aaron Judge hit 3 home runs against the Nationals. Wow, Aaron Judge hits 3 home runs. Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. Is it? Aaron Judge, he hits a lot of home runs. Well, it was amazing because it was his first 3 home run game of his career. There were some great jokes after the game from Kyle Higashioka, who is the reason I last did this as an ugla.
Is that the home run stroka?
The home run stroka. Kyle Higashioka, who hit 3 home runs in the 2020 season against Toronto. And apparently he had been joking with Judge like, hey, man, like, sorry, you're just not, you know, not as good as me. Which is very funny. And the reality is 3 home run games are really fucking random. You look at the last few years, we've seen Michael Perez and Lane Thomas and Colton Wong have 3 home run games. I was at that. Jordan Diaz at the Yankees earlier this season. But Aaron Judge not having a 3 home run game made me think, well, what? That's strange. Who the hell else doesn't have a 3 home run game? And I thought, wait a minute. Does Giancarlo Stanton have a 3 home run game? And the answer is no. Giancarlo Stanton, who is approaching 400 career home runs, is actually 6th all-time among hitters on the home run list who have not had a 3 home run game. This is a man with 36 career 2 home run games, but he has never hit 3 in a single game. The only players with more 3 homer games or with more home runs for their career without a 3 homer game, interesting list, Rafael Palmeiro, David Ortiz, never had 3 homers in a game, Gary Sheffield, Fred McGriff, and Vladimir Guerrero Sr. So Giancarlo Stanton, who yesterday hit 4 balls like 110 and is seemingly sort of, I don't know what the hell to make of him. That's something he still hasn't done. And maybe he will hit 500 homers for his career. But until he has a 3 home run game, I will not be impressed. So there you go. That's my ugly. Jake Mintz, this is a fun podcast. Thanks for doing it with me. Thank you to Chris Tyler for producing. Any final thoughts before I close things out with some housekeeping?
Orioles just announced that Adam Jones will be retiring as an Oriole on September 15th. They tweeted a little video. They're going to do like an Adam Jones day. It is Hell the first night of Rosh Hashanah, and I'm really pissed about it.
That is amazing. That is also apparently around. We could have the Jones-Strasburg dual beltway retirements next. Very different stories. Where he doesn't want to retire as a Mariner. That's interesting. That'll be very cool. Very excited about that. Congrats to him. I'm just going to read a really funny text that I just got from Mitch. I know this is super random, but you guys met Mitch. Mitch was the significant other of my now wife's roommate for a long time, and he was in the bridal party. And it's just a funny baseball tweet that I'm just going to read, or a text that I just want to read, and just leave. We're just going to end the podcast on that. He just texted me, "Yo, I just saw a graphic, and what the fuck was going on in 2019? All-time most home runs by teams in a season, and like six of the top nine are from 2019. Oh, honey, let me tell you about a thing called the juiced ball. anyway, thank you all for listening. Remember to subscribe to Baseball Barbercast wherever you listen to your podcast. Rate and review us. Let us know how we're doing. What do you like? What do you not like about the show? We will take your feedback. You can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast.
If you don't like me or Jordan, that we can't fix, but we could fix most other things.
We can't. We can't fix that. That is going to remain as far as we know. But I mean, you can tell us. We can try to improve certain things about us. But thank you all for listening. This has been a fun week of podcasting, despite all of the disappointing and sad news. We will be back next week for more, hopefully more uplifting news. Who will be in first place in the AL West? Stay tuned. But until then, have a wonderful weekend. Shabbat shalom. And we will talk to you on Monday.
SiriusXM Podcasts.